And just want to thank everyone again to help us open the meeting by doing a reading, and take this opportunity to welcome those that are joining us since we first started. A warm welcome to any visitors to us tonight, and a massive welcome to anyone that might be new to Narcotics Anonymous with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So, okay, yeah, we are a speaker meeting, and we do have a speaker, I'm delighted to say. And I'm going to hand you over to the lovely Tammy, who's going to introduce them. So, Tammy, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. My name's Tammy Emanetic.
Hello.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi,
Hi,
Tammy.
Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, everyone. I have the great privilege of introducing our speaker this evening. This lady came into my life a long time ago when I first met her, and has been an active part of my life now for about 4.5 years, and has had such an impact on me. Showing me such grace, such love, such warmth, taught me so much and continues to teach me so much. I love her dearly, and I am proud to say that she is a part of my life and a guiding light to me. And yeah, I feel very blessed to have her in my life. So with that, I will now hand you over to our speaker, Penelope.
Oh, thank you so much, Tammy. My name's
Thanks, Tammy.
Penelope and I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Well, that was quite an introduction, and I hope I can live up to some of it, all of it. Today has been like one of those days. I had a really punchy day yesterday, right on with my energy and focus and everything else. And then this morning, I thought, what's the matter? What's gone on? Which happens in recovery, right? I don't know if you relate to that, if you've got a bit of clean time, that sometimes we can expect things to be the same all the time. But it was like that when I was using. It was like, ooh, like the noise that just goes on all day, and being clean, I experience the highs and lows and the ups and downs, the different shades and colors of nature and my own being, and I accept it. It's like I have a program today. It wasn't always like that when I was using. I was so, I mean, I was asleep. I slept through a lot of my life. I kind of, I mean, I had quite a lot happen to me in my young years. So I think, without going on about it too much, but I didn't even know it was called trauma, it was just one thing after another, and I thought that's what life was about, that and I think I must have shut down really early, and not really been aware of stuff. I felt love in my home, I have to say that. I felt love from both my parents and my larger family. We're kind of a bit interesting, sort of various kind of types of people. My dad's side of the family were all a bit arty, and my aunt was a soprano, and her daughter was a soprano, and she got honored by the Queen for some stuff, that actually was what I've qualified in doing in recovery. She worked with two countries, and they're kind of through a society that she started and everything. Anyway, and my uncle was into opera and ballet, and he I mean, he used to kind of pirouette across the lawn in the 50s, 1950s, you know, and everybody thought it was very strange in families that didn't understand what he was about. And you know, I don't know why, but I kind of I ended up with certain talents in that direction, and that's what my job was. And is that you know, it's a privilege to have done it, and you know, I have to say I started using quite young with my family, because my dad was a gambler, and he went to the races, and was you know, we went in Tattersalls, and I had posh hats, and was on telly a couple of times. They thought my hat was nice, and you know, those sort of things. And we would all, you know, the group of people, they were all gamblers and liked to drink. And so when anybody backed a winner, it was like, ah, you know, let's all go let's all go down the champagne tent and open another bottle, you know. And I didn't realize it, but I was getting used to that as a lifestyle, you know, drink and alcohol. My sister, I went to live with her in Canada for a while, and she was in the process of becoming an alcoholic. So you know, my mother was also a gambler, and you know, so all these things, they lived through the war, and you know. Some of the habits that people had in the Second World War, you know, were to do with, oh yeah, sit down, have a cup of tea, and have a fag, you know. So I smoked cigarettes, so it's, you know, and then when I don't know, I had quite a successful career for a while, and my and then I started using street drugs, and I think it had followed on from a lot of anxiety that I had when I was a teenager, that I was using prescription drugs, but I didn't know it was using, do you know what I mean? Because the doctor had prescribed it, so it was like, yeah, I was a teenager and I quite liked it. We went to Ibiza, my aunt and my mum and me. And Ibiza was a beautiful island. It's not like the trashy sort of party town it is now, but I loved it in Ibiza, and I had some wonderful holidays there, spaced out on all these tranquilizers, and yeah. So I think, you know, some of the stuff that happened to me, I was on a plane. I got abducted when I was four. I was on a plane with its engines on fire, crash landed, and I was in the middle of the Atlantic when the liner, it was a Cunard liner, and it hit an iceberg, and I lost my mum. And you know, there's a bit in that Titanic film where they're down all the corridors, you know, and I was looking for my mum down all those corridors, because I was supposed to be at the lifeboat station, but I don't know how I got lost in all the legs of people going past and everything. Anyway, it was all very dramatic, and I sort of lived with that kind of edge of the cliff experience, you know, for most of the beginning of my using. So when I started to find drugs, they calmed me down and I could focus, and you know, everything made sense to me. And I did, I carried on, and I had a 60s progression of using, you know, one drug after another. You know, each brought its own kind of set of unmanageability and defects, and you know, misunderstanding about how life was. And you know, I tried all sorts of things to stop, because I could feel that that it was something inside of me, where when I didn't have any drugs, I wanted to get more drugs and, to shut it all up. And, and I was still working at that time and had, I tried to engineer my emotions with the drugs because of the different parts I was playing. And there was one part I was playing was Poppy Mandragora, and it was a weird name for a character, but she was right, really out there. And I quite enjoyed doing what I did for a while until I was so unmanageable I couldn't bear it. And I had what they called stage fright, and I couldn't bear cameras. That's why I don't go on Zoom much. And just having some kind of people kind of this is I'm talking about a time before Princess Diana, and the way that the press were. I mean, remember, I gave an interview to someone and they completely misinterpreted what I said. They wrote what they wanted to write, and I was absolutely outraged that they'd put these words into my mouth that I hadn't said. And there was lots of stuff, I went to Australia on working, and on the way back I got off in Beirut with this couple. I used to take real risks, and I got off with this couple. I'd swallowed a lump of dope, Anyway, I'm going on about that, but I got stranded in Beirut, and that was another story. But it was the day before the war started in 1974, and so yeah, I mean that was very frightening. And I got home, and the hotel I was staying in just melted like a wax candle all the way down to the floor. I watched it on the news. Oh, I was like, I'm never leaving England again. and my first institution was marriage. that was quite it was like, oh, this will fix it, we got married. Well, I mean, we were in love, but we'll get married and have a couple of kids and won't need to use anymore. And but that's not the case, right? I had nothing to arrest the disease, which was rolling quite fast by then. And I did white knuckle my way through pregnancies and, and having the babies and I mean, being an addict like I was and having had the lifestyle I had, living in Wimbledon, taking the kids to school every morning and talking to the mums was like, it was unbearable for me, a lot of stuff happened, very traumatizing stuff came, happened in between all this stuff. And I felt like I needed to use, and somebody stuck a snowball under me one day, and that was it. I was off. And I didn't look back for about a year, and I suddenly thought, I can't get up in the morning without these drugs, And, it went on like that. I can tell you more stories about my using, but I think we've all probably been there. I think I've given enough to identify myself as a very unmanageable, chaotic addict. And when it came to it, I mean, I ended up living in a caravan out in the wilds. I'd done a geographical to this town, and it wasn't a town. It was great. It was it was at the back of a an industrial estate, and on the other side was a nature reserve. And so that, but my life was like that, you know. I was all into nature, and you know, I just wanted to get back to the drugs that had worked, you know, grow a few plants and just, you know, potter about with the kids and the cat and the dog. And it didn't, you know, it didn't work like that. And somebody always turned up with more drugs, and sometimes they turned up with machetes because we hadn't paid the drug bill, or scary stuff started to happen again. And I couldn't understand how I could stop, because at that point I was looking for a way out, and I didn't know how to stop. I had no idea how to stop. I tried white knuckling it, and that didn't work. You know, it was just like, oh, you know, something would go wrong, the kids would be screaming, or there wouldn't be any money, or, you know, it's like, give me a line, give me a, roll me a joint, pour me a drink, you know, and that, you know. When I found NA, you know, and they told me, you know, this is total abstinence. You gotta be kidding. I dwelt, what, nothing? You know, nothing at all. No drugs at all. No, nothing. Mood altering. And it did take me a few months to kind of get to that point where I was willing to stop. And I wanted it, but I couldn't do it, you know. But somehow people said, keep coming back, keep doing it, you know, you're great. And the people that were in Essex at that time were really, had come from a fellowship in another country in Australia, where they had kind of quite a good handle on what recovery was. We were like pioneers in Essex. There weren't many of us, there were about five of us at most, and sometimes four, you know. And we used to go around in the car and pick up all the newcomers and take them to meetings and everything. And I was, you know, at that time I'd been told to like, you know, they kept digging me in the ribs to get a sponsor, and I did. I'd never looked up much, and she had nice shoes. And she was nice. She was really lovely. And she used to laugh at me a lot because I was so crazy, you know. And I didn't see that I was funny. I just got beyond being funny at that point. And she just told me to keep coming back. But she did suggest to do things. And then I didn't ring her because she wouldn't want to talk to me because I hadn't done what she told me to do. And then so I didn't ring her for ages. And then I ring her, and then she's like, oh, did you do what I suggested? You know, and I'd be like, no, well, yes, no. And I didn't know what honesty was. I, you know, didn't know what the truth was then. And so I started to actually understand, because, you know, then I get into a pickle because of being with, you know, with doing my own, I'm sponsoring myself, you know, and doing my own thinking, and I'd get into a real mess, and so I'd have to phone her up again and go, oh, and she'd say the same thing. So I'd have to go and do what she suggested, and funnily enough, it worked. I just kept going to meetings. They told me 90 meters in 90 days, and I did that, and you know, one of them said, you know, if you do 90 meters in 90 days and you don't feel better, we'll refund your misery in full. And I thought, oh, that sounds, what do they mean about that? I was like, oh, you buy me my first bag. Yeah, that's, yeah. But I kept going because I had had enough. I really had enough of waking up in the morning with the nightmare in my head and the other one in my gut going, oh, how am I going to get the money together to get the drugs together to just feel all right for 5 minutes? And yeah, and that was a good part of the day. And then it'll start all over again. Ooh, you know, that noise. So I started working my steps and understanding what powerlessness means, you know, powerless over people. You know, I was living with a using addict, and he'd had a look at NA, didn't want it, you know, he wasn't ready or whatever, he wasn't ready then. And I realized I was enabling him. And we had some violent fights about it because he wanted me to want to use, you know, because I was so upset. He knew how to wind me up. And the kids were like, oh, I'd taken them out of their sane, organized life. Well, somewhat organized life in Wimbledon school-wise to the middle of nowhere where, you know, they were a bit different in Essex. And you know, they were angry and resentful, and unbeknownst to me, I think both of them had started using. And you know, as the family recovery is difficult, you know, it's difficult to manage when you're using and you're trying to control young children. You know, my son had skateboards, and he used to go off to the South Bank on the train on his own. He used to bunk the train. And my daughter was living with her friend, and unbeknownst to me, she was living with the dealer. And you know, I mean, he tried to convince me quite a lot later on that he was clean, so that I would allow him to come in my house again. Because in this period of time, I realized that I needed to, like, you know, have some power back in my life, because it was reflected in the steps I was working. A power greater than me. I'd looked at religions. I'd been everywhere looking for the solution, you know, the Buddhists. But I didn't understand then about, you know, why, you know, they say it's all an illusion, but why are the traffic lights there every Sunday, you know? And I used to go to yoga, and I still do, but not as much as I used to. But, you know, that interested me because I thought, well, maybe, you know, the mind, body and spirit, you know, come together and stuff. It was a great way of getting the body moving again. And, you know, spiritually, I realized that I had to have my higher power, my spirit, strength and power in charge of my mind, which I'd get obsessed with things, you know, I'd get obsessed with the drugs, but, you know, and then, when I got clean, I was obsessed with cleaning up the caravan and, you know, sorting out the kids and trying to sort out my money and all of those things. And, you know, somebody came and was going to evict us from where the caravan was parked. And you know, somebody came from London and did a share and said, well, you know, go to a meeting and share about it. And I did. And I never saw this guy again. He terrified me. You know, I thought he was going to beat us all up, you know. And anyway, I did my steps. I did step three. And I was doing a chair when I was about a year clean, and I was glowing, you know, glowing the dark hero. I lit the room up, you know, and I had a pencil in my hair. I had very long hair. And my sponsor said, I think it's time you did your step four. And I was like, oh, Really? So anyway, I got on with it, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I find myself at a dance in London, right down the road from where I used to use, and stuff like that started coming up, and I was still cleaning up the caravan, but the whole that the whole thing was like I didn't know what I was doing. I tried to work with, because we didn't have any literature other than the basic text, and working step four in Narcotics Anonymous. And I used to think, does it matter about what I was doing when I'm at 1 to 7? I'm an addict. I'm using drugs. It's like, what's that got to do with it? And I didn't really understand, but I wrote a prayer at the top of every page, and asked God to help me be, honest and fearless and thorough, and all this stuff was coming out of me, and I've likened it to going in a derelict house with a candle, which for me was my step three, and there's no lights on in this derelict house, and you go in and go in the kitchen, and all the shelves have got stuff and food stuffs and all the bottles and jars, and they're all out of date, all past their sell by date, and looking at what's what doesn't serve me anymore, and then going in the basement, and all the things, all the boxes that are chained up that you're never going to tell anybody, and then up into the bedroom, and of course it's all the stuff in the bedroom, oh dear. And that we don't get cured overnight, but it was like the first time I looked at all this stuff, and then you go up into the attic, and it's, oh dear, what do what is your higher power doing about all this? And then I did a step five and felt like I was elevating out my trainers, because I've been carting this bag of stuff around with me, a bag literally, because I was terrified to leave it in the caravan in case the kids read it. I finally, somebody took me down to the sea, and I'm like, all the bits of paper were flying all over the beach. I did finally put it all together and have it in some organized pile, because I've just been writing, I know I sponsor people now who have books, and they're so manageable, and they can read their writing. I mean, I couldn't read. The process of the step five lifted me out my trainers. I was like elevated, and went and did a chair, and I could not believe how light I felt. I felt like I was going to float away. But then I hit the ground running with my defects, all of them, and they come like dominoes, 1, 2, 3, and they hit one and hit another. It's like runs like a rail track, and experiencing all that, and I felt like I understood, some part of me understood that the light, the sunlight of, God of my understanding, that I'd formulated, from, doing quite a lot of research and practice. Praying every day and meditating, I kind of realized that the defects stopped me from, getting on with things that I want to do, and they got in the way, and I had to deal with them by actually practicing step seven. Which took me a while, I have to say. I got lots of trouble. Not bad trouble, not arrestable trouble, but just relationship trouble, and got a kind of unmanageability with money, and the kids. I got paid for residuals for a lot of things, and kids got promised things, and it had all gone on drugs, so they were really angry and trying to make amends to them. I mean, I did the classic, sat them down and told them, look, I'm really sorry, this and all. And I hadn't done a thorough 8 and 9, really. It sort of happened. And what I realise about making amends is that it's not just about writing it down and saying sorry, it's living it. And living with the children, and I have, in the course of over at least 25 years, it took me about 25 years. My sponsor says that the first 25 years are the hardest. So keep coming back, hey. I it did take a long time for, certain things to change with my daughter. But my son, it was different. I think, he got it quicker. She went traveling, wanted to get away when I was about 6 years clean. And I didn't want to stop her because my mother had stopped me. And, but I'd get phone calls from, downtown Bangkok. Oh, I'm looking for some hot chocolate. Oh, yeah, really? And then, she'd be in the middle of Costa Rica and, and an amazing house that bordered the jungle and the beach. And, she sent me photos of the sort of like scorpions and the sounds of the monkeys and in the jungle, and I was glad that she did all that, but I was terrified for her. She went backpacking on her own. And my son went to university and, had it, we've all lived through each other's rock bottoms, and I'm not going to tell their stories now, but my son is, multiple decades and clean now. And, my relationship with both of them is unique, and I feel so fortunate to have been able to live recovery with them. And they've both got two beautiful children each, and they are such treasures. That I'm still here. I should be dead. The kind of using I did and the places I went in my mind and wanting not to be here, and that I am still on the planet, being able to experience watching them grow up. And of course it's quite painful because, some of it is like I see where my son is doing something completely different at the ages that they were when I was emotionally absent, and that causes me pain sometimes, but I can't dwell on it. And there's been a lot of forgiveness and understanding because he's clean and in recovery. And my daughter as well. And we had a little spat the other day about my shopping addiction. Which, it's a bit of a joke, mum and her shopping addiction, and I've always had trouble with numbers, and I get it right some of the time, quite a lot of the time, and sometimes I don't, and they're the times when they go on about my shopping addiction. And my unmanageability with money. And I sort of looked back over the years, and it was like my dad was a gambler and it was feast or famine, and it was the same with the kind of work I did. So money has always been like, it's not like I have a job 9 to 5 and this much comes in every week and this. But I do have a fairly sane lifestyle these days. And I don't go to meetings, this meeting much at six, because I meditate every day at six. I have a I learnt some a way of meditating that works for me, and I don't miss it. You know, it's part of the discipline of working the program. I say my prayers in the morning, and and I ask the God of my understanding. I pray on my knees because it's the shape of a two. I can't do this on my own. So it's me and my higher power, me and God. It's step two, isn't it? And I have felt that, you know, for me it works. I do that, but I know a lot of people that have my kind of clean time that got clean, and so we all used to do that. That was it. But these days, people do it the way they want, and whatever way. And you know, you develop prayers, you develop a way of talking to God and being, you know, being in that moment. And I don't like rushing into the day without, you know, acknowledging and connecting with my higher power, and meditate. You know, I used to sit in my caravan and with the basic text, and just read a line. And my head was so scrambled in those days that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't remember the first word when I got to the full stop. You know, it was like, that bastard, he did that. How am I going to pay the rent next week? You know, I was never in the moment. And one of the ways that I practice life today is I live in the day, you know, which is where I started, isn't it? Because I'm talking about, you know, yesterday I was full of like, oh, really kind of high power and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then today I woke up and then, you know, it was different, you know. Each day is a real kind of adventure for me, and I love it. I really embrace life today. I've spent the last 4 years with illness and various illnesses, some of which are consequences of my using, and it, you know, some of it is unlucky that I've just got idiopathic form of certain illness, and it has affected, and I have arthritis as well, which, and I've had a couple of operations in, you know, in the last couple of years, and two major illnesses, and COVID twice, and migraine, and food allergies because of the idiopathic the diagnosis. And yeah, so I have been a bit immobilized, which is completely different. And I've been a bit of a homebody the last couple of 3 years, because I used to be often around London, all over the place, you know, going to meetings and going to service meetings and ASCs and doing this and that. And it was lovely at the recent convention. I saw loads of people I haven't seen for ages, and had some very emotional times listening to shares. And you know, I sponsor quite a lot of women, and we all met up and went and had curry, which is tradition of my sponsor. We always go out for curry, you know, and that was part of what got me clean. You know, I was like, no, I can't afford to go out and eat. Oh my God, you know, go, don't make me, you know. And he was like, oh, we'll pay for it, you know, don't worry, just pass it on. And that's what I've done. Because when I got a car, that's what I did. I went round Essex picking people up and taking them to meetings. And, you know, some of those people are still clean, and they have a convention down there. I started a meeting, which I didn't want to start. My sponsor had said, well, why don't you go out and find that venue you were talking about? Oh no, I can't. I'm in bed. I'm duvet therapy, right? So, somehow I thought I had to practice what I always did. If she told me something, I did it. And I had a conversation with somebody today because I trusted her, right? And I trusted she knew how to work the steps. She was a lot younger than me, and I used to think, whoa, how does she know what, you know? But the funny thing is that I sponsor young women today as well, and it doesn't matter about the age, you know. She said, go and. So I tramped around. We had like a foot of snow, and I didn't have any Wellington boots. I got really soggy trainers going out looking for a venue for this. And they've got a convention down there now. I mean, this is the way NA has grown, you know. So there's thought service that you know some of the people that are on this meeting do, you know, being pioneers and building the structure that is in the guidelines and the traditions, and you know, it's been a real privilege. I didn't realize, you know, somebody said to me once, you know, you're part of the building blocks. And I used to think, what the hell's he going on about? And you know, but I did. I used to drive around and pick people up. They'd gone to their nans to detox, or you know, and I know a lot of people have done that. Some people, you know, they used to write to each other because we didn't have mobile phones. I had a phone box up the road. And when my sponsor wasn't home, and her husband, who is now my sponsor, you know, said to me, "Look, you know, dealers go with machetes at the caravan, and my children hadn't had any dinner. We hadn't got any money, and I was terrified. And what's this program? How is it going to work? You know." And he said, "Look, when you put the phone down, pray." What good's that going to do? Don't you know that they're going to kill me? He said, "Look, just do that, right? And then when you've done that, when you leave the phone box, go and sit somewhere quietly for a while and meditate." I was like, "Are you kidding?" But I'd learned enough to do the suggestions, and I did it, and you know, the phone box turned into the TARDIS. And you know, that was just like Doctor Who. I came out of the phone box, and it was another dimension. Somehow, something changed, and I went and sat down by the canal and watched the mill, you know, moving the water, and the water, it was sparkling, you know, the sunlight on the water. And I just went somewhere else. It was like, you know, I went back to the caravan, and nobody was there. And I don't know what happened to the dealers or the machete or the boyfriend or the kids went round to their friend's house. Anyway, I feel like I've been going on for ages, and nobody's given me a 5 minute what's up, you know, heads up. So I'm going to shut up now and say thank you so much. It's been a privilege to share today, and lots of love to everyone that I know or may come to know.